And that means it's time for the first hour of the Dr. and Mrs. Future program. All right, we don't seem to have the Dr. and Mrs. Future program. I'm unclear quite why, so they'll be coming to you in just a moment.
Welcome back, my friends, to the show that never ends. Ladies and gentlemen, KSCO presents the Dr. Future Show. If you would like to join in our show today, you can call us at 831-479-1080. That's 831-479-1080. And now, your host, Dr. Future.
Well, welcome to the show. Mrs. Future was busy reading the future.
That's right.
That moment.
I was catching up on the future, so the future was late. Oops. That is one thing you're not supposed to do is have dead air.
Oh, I know.
You got to have late futures sometimes, though.
Oh, sometimes. But thanks, Susan, for
the future was sleeping in.
This is future.
It's very good. Worries. Have fun with the show.
Thank you. Okay, that's Mrs. Future, and we also have Bobby on the line, Bobby Wilder, our science correspondent in San Francisco. Are you there, Bobby?
Yeah. It's all right. A beautiful day up here, too. It's
sunny, too.
Well, yeah.
All right. It would be remiss for us not to mention that we actually did our show live at Stanford last Friday night.
It's funny. That's exactly what caught my attention. I was just looking at the link to the Eventbrite last week. So I was seriously in the past.
Oh, that's us. Live. Look at that. Yeah. It went pretty well, I thought.
I had a great time. Yeah.
It was kind of funny because there's a beautiful golf course at Stanford and a restaurant right next to it with lots of round tables outside and big screens, two big screens that can be seen in the daylight. But fortunately, we didn't have to do them in daylight. It was twilight by the time we came on to a live audience.
The Bay Area SID annual dinner, which is the screen.
Society for Information Displays.
There you go. Displays.
Now, it sounds very nerdy, and it is in many ways.
But it wasn't. A lot of these people are developing the screens for VR.
Screens. It's all about screens.
Developing amazing technology that will improve the brightness of screens in the future and increase the number of colors and diminish the amount of power that they require. There's a whole new technology where they're moving away from RGB, producing three different colors to mix the range of colors that we see. And they're going towards these little cones that can act like our eyes and produce any color.
It's true. Yeah, the screens are evolving.
Yeah.
Are you?
So, yeah, it's a little nerdy, but technology is nerdy, and yet it's really exciting, too.
Yeah, there were quite a few philosophers in the group, too. We had nice conversations at the table.
Right. Oh, in fact, because it was the day that Joe Rogan had interviewed Mark Zuckerberg. So, of course, the conversations were abuzz with whether it was acceptable that the FBI ordered Facebook to suppress the Hunter Biden laptop article. And, you know, their rationalization was that they had lost the election for Hillary previously when her laptop came up. So they didn't want to do it again.
No.
Anyway, no. It was all pretty interesting conversations.
Beautiful day. And, of course, we regaled them with some of our Dr. Future stories.
Yeah. Which we did with visuals.
Yes, it was the first time we did it with visuals. That was kind of fun. I even edited a part of Back to the Future towards the end where the good doc shows up at the last minute while Matthew J. Fox is kissing his girl, and he uses Fusion, Mr. Fusion, to power the ship, power the DeLorean, and fly. And I showed a little medley of flying cars that are coming out.
Flying cars and breakthroughs in fusion. Two things that never gets old.
There's some good visuals for that. Mm-hmm. And I realize that quite a few of our stories lend themselves well to visuals.
Mm-hmm. And I'll tell you, we get a little spoiled here coming in every Tuesday thinking, the future, this is passe. We covered this before. We covered this again. But going to a new audience, we realize how unique it is that a lot of people really are not thinking about this stuff. They're not seeing it coming. They're very much engaged in their own micro culture.
In their own worlds.
Yeah.
Everyone's kind of in their own worlds to a large extent.
Yeah. It felt really fresh.
Yeah. The thing that I like about radio is the interactivity of the call-ins. We tried having a mic there for a live audience, but it was more like people wanted to listen. It was really interesting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, it was a pretty fascinating show.
Yeah.
And there was both humor and philosophy and awe, I would say.
Yeah, and Bobby talked about how everyone could stimulate themselves with some light instead of drinking coffee to go home.
Oh, yeah, everybody liked that. Yeah. The blue light in the morning to wake up.
I couldn't really tell, but yeah, I guess they did enjoy it. I did have a couple people come up and ask me about that.
Yeah, you had some conversations at the end.
I did too. Yeah. And of course, we did some of the headlines from last week, like steaks out of thin air.
Yes, steaks out of thin air.
A few vegetarians that were very excited about that possibility came up and talked after the show.
Right. Never mind water out of thin air.
Right. Yeah. Actually, we had one fellow come and tell us that Kurzweil was dead, which we were shocked to hear, and then found out later wasn't true. So
Kurzweil's alive and well. And this was a guy who he had been head of something called IEEE, which is a major engineering organization that puts on hundreds of conferences.
Yeah, they're a standards organization for electric.
So I'm surprised he would say that.
I guess I thought maybe he had inside information, but we checked our inside information and he was just not, maybe he was confusing with somebody else.
Yes. Kurzweil is alive. Gorbachev is dead.
Yeah, Gorbachev didn't make it.
Passed today, I believe.
Yeah.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it's all on the news right now.
Didn't I see you and Sun when Gorbachev was in the Presidio and he had, was that the World Economic Forum?
Yep. Yes, we have attended the World Economic Forum ourselves a couple of times. We were invited guests by Henry Dakin and got to videotape and interview lots of the people who were presenting. We were nearby when various world leaders were getting pies in the face.
Yeah.
I like to watch.
Yeah. I actually got to see Thich Nhat Hanh. And so I sat in front of him and I realized that he was the embodiment of Zen. He took us to upstairs and there was a little garden and it was a very short, there was a little like island of flowers in the middle. And if you walked around it, it would normally take you about a minute, you know, but actually I was right behind him and we were taking these very slow steps. It was a meditation in walking.
Wow.
And it took
walking
30
with
minutes.
The master.
Yes.
30
walking
minutes,
just 30 minutes to walk around this thing. And that changed my life completely.
Wow. Is it a 30 minute conversation ensued?
No, it was completely quiet. Oh. Just very slow walk. Yeah, but it is mindful meditation is what it was.
Oh. Beautiful. What a great story.
What was his name again?
Thich Nhat Hanh?
Thich Nhat Hanh, yeah. He passed away a couple years ago, unfortunately. But he was in Plum Village in France.
Beautiful. Yeah. Well, that's a remarkable experience.
All right, well, after the break, we'll get to some of our stories today.
All right.
See you in a minute.
And our callers will be here.
Righty then. You know, we do have a caller, and we're going to get to you in a moment, caller. But first, I want to mention that second hour, we have a very interesting interview with Steve Wagner, who wrote a book called All You Need Is Myth, about the Beatles and the gods of rock, which really looks at how a whole generation has embraced rock and roll as a religion.
Sure.
As a religion.
Remember the old phrase, more famous than Jesus?
Yeah, John Lennon, right?
Yeah.
So he's really looked at this. He has some strong thoughts on rock and roll and religion.
Sure, and does a great job of really educating us both about myth and traditions and insider stories from rock and roll era. So it's a very entertaining book.
Yes.
Lots of new information. Very enjoyable.
Yeah, Steve Wagner. Stay tuned for the second hour.
All right.
Yeah.
And are we going
to
say
hello to our caller before we get to our
David
stories,
in San Francisco? Hi, David.
Hey, David.
Hello, David.
Yeah, how do you do? A couple of things. It's a shame that Gorbachev died.
Yeah.
He was pretty instrumental in changing a huge amount of the world's, not only the world's budgets and economy, but the peaceful direction of the world. But obviously those oligarchs kind of took over after him. It's a shame he remained quiet about it, though. He could have spoken up about some of those oligarchs, and I don't really see too much evidence that he did.
Yeah, you don't get the idea that there's a lot of free speech in Russia.
Well, he lived up here in San Francisco. Did he die up here?
I'm not sure. I asked that question, too. Where was he living when he died? And I haven't read the article myself yet. We just heard it announced as we were coming into the station. So apparently it's fairly breaking news.
Yeah, he lived here for at least a decade, and he had an institute up on pretty near the Golden Gate Bridge on the Presidio. Mm-hmm. And I think it's still operational. But the other thing I was going to talk about, the nuclear power plant down in San Luis Obispo, Diablo Canyon, it's supposed to shut down in a couple of years, I think by 2025.
Wow.
But a couple of scammers on the California legislature are trying to give it a respite and not only give it a fat budget, but to basically force the taxpayers to pay for any number of different, you know, as they've been trying to shut it down, they've been refusing to keep the upkeep going on it. And then if they want to extend the life on it, all of that failure to keep the upkeep on it is going to actually jack up the price for keeping it alive. Mm-hmm. So it's a bunch of layers of scam. And if you know about the coolant pond alone down in San Luis Obispo, if I understand right, there are dozens of fault lines underneath their coolant pond. It's not just one or two fault lines underneath the coolant pond, but that there are dozens of them, and that just an earthquake of one direction versus another could cause the coolant pond to drain out, and then the whole plant be, let's say, problematic. So I just, the thing needs to be shut down. It needs to have been shut down yesterday, and now these scammers are trying to, it's going to come up for a vote tomorrow evening, and it's called SB 846. So if any listeners want to help put a stop to the Diablo Canyon nuclear power plant, it's SB 846.
Great. All right, David, just really appreciate you calling in, letting people be aware of those issues and timing. So if people, what action do you think is most effective? I suppose if people are in the Sacramento area, they can try and show up. But short of that, you think, it's still time to send letters to your representatives? What do you think?
Well, calling would obviously be better, or email. But each of the state senators would be the people to contact.
Isn't Diablo the last operational nuclear power plant in California?
Well, I'm trying to remember if there's hypothetically a reactor above UC Berkeley. Yeah, a real reactor. There's been a kind of a test reactor. Trying to remember what the name of that one is, but it's nowhere near as big and powerful and mismanaged. You know, if you remember, PG&E got busted for decades because they would take the safety money and pocket it, whether it was cutting back the branches on the trees for the lines, whether it was that pipeline that they knew for 50 years that the pipeline that blew up San Bruno had been a defective pipeline when they installed it in the early 1950s, and they never inspected it because they knew when they put it in the ground that it was defective when they put it in. Mm-hmm. And so they would pocket the inspection money, they would pretend to inspect it, and then they would just pocket that money and not inspect it, and it eventually blew up in San Bruno.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I remember that.
Yeah, and
you know, I have a feeling we are about to enter an era of people taking our lawmakers to court as individuals for crimes against society, because so many people have been getting away with just using the government as a front for criminal activities. And I'm hearing of a number of lawsuits being posed locally. Recently, there was one in Chicago where a number of businesses that were executing government mandates that were unlawful, but the businesses were choosing to execute them anyway, were sued by their employees, and the employees won. And it's really, I think, setting a precedent that people are going to start suing the government for failure to serve the public, basically.
Yeah, that's called mandamus, if I understand right. A writ of mandamus is, you know, if the sewer department is supposed to take care of sewers, and it's not, then you have to come up with a writ of mandamus to force them to do their job.
Yeah.
And it, apparently it's very difficult to get a writ of mandamus passed, especially when you get people like Trump, you know, who was able to... Mitch McConnell made sure that Obama was not able to get a single judge, federal judge, passed for years. Maybe it was 6 years he couldn't get a single federal judge. And then as soon as Trump came in, he got over 200 judges in, more than any president in history, and almost all of his judges were crooks. So writs of mandamus are extremely hard to get, much less now when you've got criminal judges sitting on the federal bench. You know, so our country is at risk when we have judges that are on the take and refuse to deal with science, much less to deal with honest taxation with representation issues. But in the case of Diablo Canyon, it's been sitting on fault lines since the very beginning. The architects and designers of Diablo Canyon knew those fault lines were there, and they intentionally denied the California PUC the knowledge, and so they got the permit to build a nuclear power plant on fault lines, and then when the information was finally disclosed decades later, you know, it was too late. And so now they're trying to get California to pay them
to fix the problem that they created criminally. All right, well, David, thank you for the information. If you could just say the name of the bill one more time.
Oh, 846, Senate Bill 846, and it comes up for a vote tomorrow night. Tomorrow night is the very last night of the California legislature, and so this apparently is going to be a sneak-through bill.
846. Okay, David, thank you so much.
Yeah, David, thank you so much.
Yeah, I can shoot it down to the Facebook page for KSCO.
Oh, do that. Yeah, that'd be great.
Future at KSCO is our email. Future at KSCO.com.
Email us a link as well. So.
Future at KSCO. Okay.
Mm-hmm. All right. Yeah.
Thanks, David.
Okay, thanks.
Good job. All right.
Yeah, there used to be a research reactor at Berkeley.
Yeah.
I was taking a class there and I got to see it, but then they had a nuclear free zone that they announced in Berkeley, so they cemented it in. It was in Etcheverry, one of the big buildings.
This one is actually still operational. They say it costs about 6 cents per kilowatt hour to make power from it. But they plan to shut it down anyway in 2024 and 2025, mm-hmm. According to Wikipedia. So we got one more caller before we go to our news break.
Okay, it looks like a call-in day here. Hello, we are saying hi to T in Monterey. Hi, T.
Hey there.
Hi. Well, I'd like to bring some counterbalance to the previous caller, so hopefully you probably need to hold me over on the...
Well, you got a minute. Give it a shot.
Okay, yeah, let's get going. So I have traditionally been very much against nuclear power plants. I used to live down in San Luis Obispo when I went to Cal Poly down there, and it was something I wasn't terribly uncomfortable with, but it was always kind of lingering that if there was an incident there, we're kind of right in the, you know, footprint of that. But because of the need that we're going to need to have for generating electricity with all the green electric nutsies that are shutting down our conventional power plants, the ones that run on natural gas and so forth, we need to keep Diablo online as long as possible and maybe put some more power plants in that run on atomic fuel, because wind and solar are not going to ever cut it. I'm not sure what you all think, how much you looked into it, but I'd much rather have Diablo still online than to have, well, first, electricity rates are going to go skyrocket through the roof with all the electric cars, increasing demand and so forth, and getting rid of natural gas hookups to residents and all that. It's just electricity demand is going to go way, way up, but the supply is going to be reduced because we're not going to have anything but solar and wind, which can't do it. So we also need to outlaw crypto mining and make them convert to solar and wind.
There you go.
All right. Thank you. I've got a lot of stories to cover, so I appreciate your input on that. But I need to get this one.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, you bet.
Cool. Great.
Take care.
All right. We'll be back.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a controversial issue. Very interesting. There are solutions, though. Okay, we got some more callers, but I just want to say that we're in a transition period right now. The reality is that we are moving towards fusion, and fusion is going to change everything, literally everything. And it really isn't just 10 years out always. It's really getting closer. 33 companies now at startups that are involved in the fusion business, and many of them are coming online in the next few years. When that happens, everything changes.
You're kind of in between the last two callers, yeah. Because on the one hand, you think that the old nuclear plants do need to be shut down because they're non-renewable, but the new nuclear plants.
It depends on how dangerous they are. I don't want to see a bunch of nuclear water being thrown into our water supply. I mean, who does? Who wants to suffer for that?
Plus, having decision makers that were very centralized, a previous generation, choose to put in this very toxic technology that can go bad, and then have the next generation chintz out on maintaining it and just try and, you know,
keep going until
criminally get rich while it pollutes the bay.
Yeah, they're opportunistic monkeys, I tell you.
Right.
I mean,
and
it's just crazy.
Having enough electricity for a complete switch over from fossil fuels to electrical power.
You need a transition period.
Is not realistic. Yeah.
No, you need a nice transition. And that's what's hard to figure out.
It took us 100 years to get here. And let's hope it doesn't take us 100 years to smoothly transition away.
Unless I hope we don't have a big earthquake there in the meantime. There are breakthroughs happening. Breakthroughs. Yeah.
You just have to look at Fukushima. You know, they didn't anticipate a tsunami that would actually come in and turn off the diesel generators.
Fukushima
and
Chernobyl both have changed the attitude that people have, no matter how educated you are, about what's safe and what is doable. You can't put in something that requires 100 years of management because you can't trust each generation to be as smart as the generation before it.
And
there are
unanticipated things for all outcomes.
Or earthquakes. You know, you can't anticipate how big
earthquakes. Or look at what's happening in the Ukraine with their nuclear power plant now.
Yes, being weaponized, used as a weapon to make sure that anybody can bomb it who wants to create vomit.
More opportunism in action.
Yeah.
All right, well,
hatred.
Let's go to our callers.
Until we retire hatred, we can't
deal
really
with the human consciousness
other.
On this, I tell you.
Yeah. All right, we're going to go to Colonel Terry. Hi, Colonel Terry.
Hey there.
Yeah, hi, beautiful Mrs. Future.
Thank
and your
you.
Buddy.
Yeah, my buddy. Hey,
he
buddy.
He is my buddy.
Hey, good old Colonel.
Way beyond.
I respect reality and facts and evidence.
Yeah, what does that mean?
The facts and evidence about nuclear power is it's a mixed blessing, of course.
Yeah.
But it does produce energy very inexpensively in comparison to other things, if you can harness it correctly. And by the way, I spent some time while being an Air Force officer on nuclear submarine.
Uh-huh.
That reactor, and then I took an interest in learning about the other size ones, totally proven reliable, totally proven for decades to be safe, the shipboard reactor designs. And again, they use far less fuel, produce less pollution, all of that.
And so we can trust the technology, but what about the people wielding it?
And they can be boxed up and shipped into the sun, okay, to get rid of the the radiation.
He's the new Artemis. Just shoot them up there, right?
Very reliably. More significantly, you know, I've proposed this for some time.
Yeah.
California could put 6 or 9 naval-style reactors away from the coast and make electricity dirt cheaper than damn PG&E overcharges us for, and also produce fresh water from 6,000 miles of Pacific Ocean.
Desal.
And put the brine further out in the middle of the Pacific and dissipate it. That would be a solution for the farmers in the San Joaquin Valley and our water resources everywhere.
Yeah.
I don't know why we haven't done that, and the $98 billion California has in surplus, it would only take about $6 or $9 billion to build what I've described, maybe even half that.
I say Navy nukes and desal plants solve our problem.
All right. Thanks, Colonel Terry.
It would help. And it's sad. Gorbachev was a fine human being.
Yeah, he was.
An era of peace and optimism, and we sure have come a long way since then.
Well, that's what happens to Russia when you have the Putins take over, the thugs.
Yeah.
Over.
Yeah, well, thugs. Thugs do tend to end up in charge, don't they?
Well, until they don't.
until we stop them. Thanks, Colonel Terry. We're going to try and get to some of our headlines, so appreciate your call.
Take good care of yourselves. Okay. Don't go to a Trump rally and catch COVID.
No. Unlikely. Thanks. Okay.
One more caller?
We got one more.
Okay.
And this is Firefall. Hi, Firefall.
Hey there, Firefall.
Hello. Who do you like better, Colonel Terry on Rob Carson or me on Rob Carson?
Well, going to tell jokes?
I have to say, if you were just on him, I missed it. I haven't listened to him the last few days. So.
That's all right. Okay, so I wanted to comment on the nuke plants, and I want to comment on the fault, and I want to comment on the fire in San Bruno first.
How about one minute? So, you get 1 minute, because our whole show is callers so far.
I got some great stories to share,
We too. Really have some stories to share. Our show
No, go ahead. You got a few minutes right now.
All right, go ahead.
All right, okay, so like San Bruno fire was started because South San Francisco used to be a steel town. They used to produce a lot of steel. They had USX, they had Bethlehem Seat Steel, they had Sule Steel. They had a lot of smelting operations, chemicals. It was where all the heavy manufacturing in California was done. And when they closed down steel mills, the problem with San Bruno is it's contiguous with all the other cities around there. So San Bruno is sharing a lot of the gas lines with South San Francisco and that other areas of Millbrae. And so when they closed down the steel mills, they capped off all the pipes and the gas lines, but they did not bleed the gas lines. That means a lot of the parts of the pipes that are shared with the different cities and the gas lines were not bled. So there was some trapped gas that was used in the furnaces of steel making at Bethlehem Steel.
Okay, Firefall, I have to tell you, I'm afraid I don't see how this relates to anything that we were discussing or anything that we want to discuss, and it's been over a minute, and you've started a whole new line of conversation, and we really did make an effort to bring some things to the show today that we want to share with the audience. So I just want to say thank you, thank you so much.
They did bring up the San Bruno fire, though.
I know, somebody mentioned it. It wasn't me. But I know.
Well, do you want to hear about the nuke stuff?
Well, what about
the nuclear plant?
Okay, give us a minute.
All right,
that.
They closed Rancho Seco. They closed San Onofre. They closed Pleasanton and Dublin reactor. They did close the Berkeley reactor. But has I ever heard of any fault around Diablo? The San Andreas fault is over 50 miles away. So if the San Andreas fault is over 60 miles away, what, the eco-freaks invented some phony faults they can make an argument about? No, keep it open. Keep it open. That's the only good thing Newton's ever done in his pot brain is finally wake up and decide to keep it open. And what about Hetch Hetchy? They're going to drain that dry. Where's the salmon going to go upstream?
Look, it was built less than a mile from the shoreline fault line, which was not known to exist at the time of construction. And it's located less than 3 miles from what's called the Hosgree Fault, which was a 2016 probable risk assessment towards the plant. So those things happened after it was already built.
So I have to say that these kinds of issues, it's nice to air them out on a show like this, but we're not going to be able to make decisions in the space of this kind of conversation. And this is the kind of thing that we really need to have some kind of wisdom council as part of our citizens' voice talking to our government about what choices we need to present to the public, because opinions and facts, when they're just isolated and they're not engaged where a bigger conversation is facilitated, all that does is make everyone afraid.
Yeah.
And we can really take this information and be much more productive with it if we get somebody like Jim Ruff on board.
Yeah. Okay. Well, that's a whole other thing. It's beyond talk radio.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it takes a lot of time.
So anyway, thank you, Firefall. Appreciate your thoughts and your knowledge.
I think the real problem is storage of the waste material.
Yeah, that would do with that.
You know, I took a class at Berkeley. It was ionizing radiation and life through the nuclear physics department. And that's how come I got to see that reactor in the basement of Echeverry. And, you know, the problem with uranium-238, which is used as a fuel rods, the half-life, you know, which means, like, how long does it take for half of it to decay into something else? The half-life of uranium is 4.4 billion years. So if you dig up uranium and you expect it to decay into lead eventually, half of it would decay. It would take longer than 4.4 billion years for half of it to decay. So launching it to the sun Do you know how much it costs to...
No, it's ridiculous. I mean, it takes too much energy to go into the sun. That's for sure.
It's too heavy. It's a heavy material, and you're trying to launch it to the sun. It would cost more than So that is the cost of these nuclear reactors.
You know what's going to happen to this?
Is the waste.
Eventually, we'll create those miniature suns with the nuclear fusion reactors, and we'll throw it into those.
Yeah, exactly.
Because it's going to be way too expensive to send any. And plus, so Norm pointed out that a nuclear aircraft carrier only makes water and electricity for only 5,000 people. You know, on that's the naval nuclear reactors. That's kind of small for something like California. You know, I mean, that wouldn't even enough power for San Luis Obispo.
Well, I'm still stuck on the half-life of the radiation and the decay of four some odd billion years.
Well, there are reactors that will use nuclear waste as well, the new smaller reactors, which is another potential solution.
If we're waiting for the decay of the radiation, I mean, the sun is supposed to start decaying and dying in about 2 billion years. So, you know, those reactors will still be working after the sun is retired.
Yeah, right. Hey, let's go to a break, okay?
On that note.
Yeah, I like that, Big M. Slingshot heroes, just sling it into the sun. It'll get rid of the problem.
A lot of people have said that. That's the way out. What could go wrong?
Getting it there. Anyway, Colonel Terry wants to talk more about this, but we want to talk about other things. So he's going to send us some accurate information about what he really means for his nuclear solution to us. And we'll put it on our links page.
We'll pass it forward. A lot of interest in this subject.
Very much so. I'll tell you, though, we live off the grid. We do just fine, thank you. We have our neighbors who just got a new lithium-ion battery system in. It's completely charged by 10 o'clock in the morning on a sunny day. It charges in cloudy weather. It's amazing.
And what I love about it is since we moved out of the city and onto the grid where we are farming our own power with our own solar panels.
We never have any power failures ever.
That's right. The grid goes down and we barely notice.
So if you want to believe all the propaganda about how it's bad and there's not enough power and all that stuff,
well, there isn't enough for the kind of
industrial
centralized grid distributed power, because the way that it works is that a certain amount of self-reliance and changing your habits so that you're actually in tune with nature. Because solar power requires that you do things differently during the day and night, kind of like before
electricity. You have more power in the afternoon, just the opposite of PG&E. You have lots more power in the afternoon.
That's right. You don't throttle it back when everybody's awake using power. In fact, that's when you use your power.
Exactly.
Anyway, it's a different lifestyle. It's a different mentality. And it's something that can be learned by people who care to.
And it's not that different. I wouldn't say that.
But self-reliance is very different than paying money and turning on a light switch.
You have to pay more attention to your power.
You have to be more on top of it. You have to understand it yourself.
But you have apps now. You can watch
it to someone else.
Yeah, you can watch what's going on with your house. It'll tell you if there's any problems, that sort of thing.
Yeah. Anyway, you got 10 minutes your entire slate.
I'm going to outline some of the things. Sad about Artemis. Artemis didn't launch. Hopefully, it'll go on Friday. There are two more launches that are being planned over the next couple of years, like one a year, and hopefully by 2024
we're taking you seriously. I know you wanted to launch in 2016 and you got all embarrassed when Elon Musk started doing vertical takeoff and landing and reusing his rockets, and it seems like that $500 million you wanted to spend in 2016 is now up to $100 billion, so you got to make good. I understand the pressure you're under, but come on, get off the ground already.
Yeah, just get up there. On another NASA topic, the James Webb Telescope has spotted carbon dioxide in an exoplanet, which was
never possible before. So amazing.
Yeah, it was confirmed. That was very interesting to be able to do that. It's not the kind of planet we'd want to be on. It's kind of like a Saturn-weighted planet, but it's bigger than Jupiter, but it weighs like with Saturn, which is a fourth the size of Jupiter. And it's very close to the sun.
To its sun.
Yeah, it
orbits. It's an eighth of the orbit of Mercury.
Its year is 4 days long from our planet. It's very close to the sun.
Right. But
WASP
we did
39B.
Spot its atmosphere with this new infrared capacity of the James Webb Telescope.
Which will be very useful for finding planets that look like Earth, rocky planets.
Yeah.
So they're testing that, and that's being done at UC Santa Cruz here.
Yeah.
Very fascinating interconnection. Other NASA news, there's the NASA DART. It's confirmed to impact a target next month.
What is the DART going to do?
This is a very interesting approach. This is where we're trying to deflect asteroids from the Earth. If we see something dangerous coming towards our planet, we'll want to be able to deflect it away from us, you know?
So this is a test to see if that's possible.
And this is a test of two asteroids, one orbiting the other. Okay, so one's big and one's small. The small one orbiting the big one. And we're trying to try to hit the smaller one. That's orbiting.
We're playing space billiards,
yeah.
This is like missile command.
And they'll be able to see how much we're able to deflect it with the DART deflector.
Okay, so DART is actually going to crash into this asteroid.
Yes, it's like a pool game. You know, you hit it and we'll see what happens.
Right.
We have to analyze what the asteroid is made out of, whether it's rock or whether or not it's a rubble pile. It really will react differently depending on the materials that we're impacting.
And so, this asteroid, how far away from Earth is it?
It's over 1 million miles away.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, it's out beyond the moon, way beyond the moon. But so it's a safe distance to test these things. And we've been using ground-based telescopes on the world to really look at it. So it's going to be quite something to see how well it works.
Yeah.
All right, so DART
is going to try and reroute an asteroid a million miles from home. We'll see if we have the ability to do that on command.
Yeah, Didymos is the big one. Dimorphos is the small one. And we'll be hitting the small one, hopefully.
Mm-hmm.
We hit just right. And that'll be happening on September 26th, so we'll be able to tell you what goes on the show.
Oh, great. Yeah.
Yeah. So we got another caller, Mrs.
We have three more callers.
All right, 3 minutes. Hey.
This is Steve in the Santa Cruz Yacht Harbor. Hi, Steve. You got 1 minute.
Hey, Steve.
Okay. The coolest thing I've seen all week.
Yeah.
A V8-powered Tesla.
Really? Serious?
What's a V8-powered Tesla? Well, you mean like tomato juice?
Is it an ice car?
Listen, you got to look up Rich builds a V8-powered Tesla on Joe Rogan. He's a really cool builder. Super engineering, super technology. They built a beautiful V8-powered Tesla. The second question I had was, I'm curious about the future of Lake Mead in Las Vegas.
Mud Mead? You mean Lake Mud?
Now, I've seen that their power generating capabilities is going to come to an end, but they'll still be serving water to L.A., I guess, somehow.
Wow.
But that's like, I guess Las Vegas is not really high priority.
Yeah. Wow.
Yeah. Las Vegas tries to get water from wells quite a bit.
I'm from there, and my family sold my dad's property there about 10 years ago, and in the 50 years that he lived there, his
water table went way down.
Water table went down by 30 some odd feet.
Yeah.
And in the desert.
It's a tragedy there.
Well, that's why we have to get water from the air. You know, there are new ways to do that.
All right. We got to keep moving, Steve. Yeah. We got a couple more people to squeeze in.
It's going to get rich a critical point.
Thank you.
A critical point where we have to think different.
Yeah, we're there.
Yeah.
Hi, Wendy. We got a whole minute for you.
Hey, Wendy.
Well, there's so much to talk about, especially when he brings up Rich Rebuilds. Yeah. I've been there since his first rebuild of a flood victim Tesla. Oh, yeah, he's great.
You know about Emma.
Oh, yeah, totally. He's a YouTuber. The other thing was quantum physics.
Quantum physics, okay.
Yes.
Quantum.
Now, this is my brief summation, and it's probably wrong. Wow. Bell's theorem, non-locality, and quantum entanglement are basically dealing with this was instantaneous transmission of information between quantum systems. And they have just said that it isn't instantaneous, that there is a time variable in there that they've been able to figure out. So all those people who are like, you know, Robert Anton Wilson weirdos and, you know, those side guys who are like, oh, but it could be quantum entanglement kind of people.
Yeah.
It isn't as weird as it sounded.
Okay. More back to the standard
thank you,
model,
Wendy.
Are we?
Breaking news and quantum entanglement. I love it.
This one is MC was talked to Yoko, and during the bed-in, during the Berkeley riots, just a little bit of trivia on our host and master.
Oh, you're going to love the next hour. We're going to be talking about John and Yoko a lot.
I wanted to get that in there, so I'm sure there's some people who also know the story and who can call in and tell you more. Okay, and thank you very much.
Very good. Thank you, Wendy. Okay. Appreciate
your call. Great. Okay. And we have one more. We've got Steve from Pacific Grove. Hi, Steve. You got 1 minute, and then we're going to be over and done for the hour.
Hey,
can
Steve.
Can I wait till the top of the hour starts?
No, we have a guest coming in. Now's your chance.
Okay.
2 minutes.
Yoko Ono is no good. Yoko Ono, I ran out of America. She lives in Switzerland now. She's in a wheelchair. She hasn't lived in New York City for years. I ran her out of New York. I'm the John Lennon man.
I know.
Yoko Ono had me kidnapped, handcuffed, and pistol whipped.
You? Really?
But the reason I want to call is this. You said something about asteroids.
Yes.
I was on Joe Bohanna last night, and he hung up thinking I was making it up, but I wasn't making it up.
Yeah.
I saw an asteroid when I was 12 that was 50 miles across, going so fast, it went from one side of the sky to the next.
Wow.
Took up a sixth of the sky, and my first thought was, gee, we almost all just died.
Dope.
And so I saw the most magnificent sight of any human being living today. I saw it. And I know how much power God has if we misbehave, and that's why I care.
Yeah.
Matter of fact, my signs on my John Lennon van now read, avenge John or be wrong. And the other sign says, God damn everybody's apathy.
Thank you for calling, Steve. I'm glad you are hanging in there, paying attention, and I think you're going to have a lot to say after you hear our next guest. So thanks for calling.
All right.
We'll be back.
Take
after
care.
Traffic, news, and weather.
Yeah. So our next hour, we're talking to Steve Wagner, who wrote a book called All You Need Is Myth, The Beatles and the Gods of Rock, revealing the hidden keys to the soundtracks of our time. Yeah, which is really a new religion. It's like rock has become a religion for many.
All right. We'll be back. This is KSU Santa Cruz.